Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
I know you're listening, so go big.
Cubs trail by three. The pitch. Swing and a miss. Strike three. Ball game over. The Padres win the opener of this four-game set, 4-1 over the Cubs.
To third base, Moncada keeps it in front and throws to first to finish the deal tonight. And the Sox win 9-5 in the series opener in Detroit.
Well, that's a tribute with a little old REM right into his very own band right there. Matt Spiegel is the co-host of the Parkinson Spiegel Show on Sports Radio 670 The Score. You can find him on Twitter at MattSpiegel670. And we like to have him on talking about his absolute favorite sport, which is baseball. And here he is on the Score Hotline that is brought to you by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sportsbook. Hello, Spiegs.
Hello, Dan. Do you like filet or ribeye better?
Oh,
and
God.
Is that a standard? Ribeye, as do I. It's objectively better. Well, is that where Joe McEwing stands then? Because that was Lance Lynn's explanation for the dugout kerfuffle, and that is just freaking delightful.
Yeah, I just think what Craig Calcaterra said was he said that in his older age, the fat content of, or he agrees that ribeye is better, uh-huh. And he said some nights he prefers a filet because he's learned that he can digest it easier because the ribeye can be so richly marbled.
I hate the decisions that are made so frequently to just lie to us, you know? I mean, Lance Lynn evading it is fine, but Tony saying it was about a pitch that he didn't execute is stupid. It's like the day before when Cease, he was just out there getting a bullpen on his side day.
No, Dylan Cease
either volunteered just like Johnny Cueto did on his side day, or Tony was thinking about it on his side day, because sometimes you have to do that as a manager. Like I wouldn't have freaked out if Dylan Cease came in for a game on his side day when you're trying to get a win and you're playing like a dead-ass team, but he didn't even want to cop to it after the game. I hate the needless lying.
Well, I'm cutting him some slack because of that post game last night. I got so much joy watching an old manager with his pants off sitting there clearly after something relaxed him before the media session. So I have decided to because I grew up as a reporter and as an observer in those offices with those old men.
Yeah.
And I think the world would be a better place if any sort of meeting of any formality meant beforehand, drink two beers as fast as you can and unbutton the top button of your pants.
I have a friend who had a T-shirt with a Venn diagram, and it was in one circle was times in my life I'm not having as much fun as I should be, and another circle was times in my life I'm not wearing pants, and they did not connect the two circles at
all.
Maybe I summarized that poorly, but you get the idea.
Yes, and you can one doesn't have to be full Sparky Anderson or Don Zimmer and be completely sans
Dick
pantaloons.
Williams. Come on,
well,
Dick Williams is my favorite.
Okay, but that wasn't in a post game. I'm just talking about when you go to, you know,
Dan,
when you
was it after a game when he's at the motel and he's knocking on doors pantsless? It was technically after a game.
He wasn't knocking on doors. Don't confuse him with Leon Lee. He was in the breezeway. He was walking in the motel breezeway without any pants on. And that was a crazy day. That's when Rosner and I were debating the relative petty crime of that. And that's when David Faraday called in. David Faraday was driving. He was driving from Sheboygan to the Quad Cities Open and was listening and called in to talk about Dick Williams walking around without pants. But that's neither here nor there. The fact is, La Russa is here, and the Sox got a win. And the pressure feels like it's off for 24 hours. And now with Dylan Cease going, you think, okay, here's yet. I so many times this season I've said, okay, now is when they stop sucking.
Right. That's the problem. I've said it too. I waited a long time. I didn't even realize I was waiting. Didn't even realize what was necessarily happening as I stuck to my guns and said that the White Sox were going to win this division, that they would slug enough to overcome and obfuscate the other issues that this team has. But slugging time is here. Suns are out. Suns out, runs out, baby. If the average OPS of baseball, you know, it's right around 710, okay? Right around 710, and that's what it's been for most of the year. Over the last 30 days, 20 teams, 20 different teams have a team OPS over that. 20 teams. Wow. So the Sun, it has come. The overall offensive jump when the Sun comes out has come. And the White Sox are 22nd. These numbers are as of yesterday morning. They're not doing it. And even when they are scoring big runs, I know they got 9 and the win last night, but look over the weekend. Even when they are scoring big runs, they're often too sloppy or played too dumb to really get it done. I feel like I've watched enough. I'm withdrawing my feeling that they're going to win the division. They still might, because baseball is baseball, and that would be super fun. I really wanted them to be excellent, wanted to ride this window in full. But as I watch them, man, that's a sloppy team. That is a dumb team. It is an organization that is not winning at the margins, which is the way that modern baseball is won, by having a good plan and a good system and having a smart front office that works with a partner in the manager to really accomplish everything. The best teams win as organizations these days, even if you don't notice it, or some of the fans don't even realize that that's happening. They win because they prioritized defense 6 years ago when they drafted somebody, when they signed and developed somebody. And this organization is back to, it's all on the players. It's all on the players. And so the players have to be great enough. And will the players be great enough? Maybe. I hope so. That would be fun. And if they get in, of course, the small sample of the playoffs could do all sorts of things. But I'm done thinking that a turning point is going to come and they're going to start playing like a crazy good team and go on a 22-5 run, or, you know, win 12 straight like the Braves just did. I don't believe that's in there right now. I need to be shown it.
I've taken World Series champion off the table, and maybe, like you say, maybe that's a little silly because of the randomness of the playoffs, where Tony La Russa has already managed an 83-win team that backs into the playoffs in a crappy division and ends up winning the World Series just because. But it just, there's nothing about this team, even if we give them the benefit of the doubt of regression and allow some guys to get back to the backs of their proverbial baseball cards, that they don't play like a champion. They may play like the champion of a bad division, but they don't play. There's nothing satisfying, like you say, organizationally. The other issue is when we project for potential deadline improvements, the resources aren't there. They don't have the opportunity to go out and start grabbing people to shore up some of these. If you are going to do what you say and say, well, we might be a little sloppy, we might be a little stupid, but we're going to just throw the ball by people and hit the ball over the fence enough that it's not going to matter. You got to be better than this. And you have to spend the money to make sure you're better than that. And in a lot of ways, they've almost self-handicapped.
Well, you know, the problem is, like, look, and it's too bad that it feels so negative even after a win, but it's what we've watched and what we've seen. The pro scouting department is obviously bad. I mean, look at what has happened with some of the mid-level free agent signings and some of those deadline acquisitions, which were well-intended last year but blew up in their faces over a variety of things. And maybe it's about the continuity within the organization. Like, if you're going to go get Kimbrel, he has to close, and Liam Hendricks has to be a willing eighth-inning guy, which we talked about at the time, because now there's Kimbrel out in L.A. doing, for the most part, a pretty damn good job with the Dodgers. Or if you're going to get Cesar Hernandez, you got to know him as a person and know whether he's going to be tight or not, or what is going to happen to him when he blows up. And you shouldn't be signing Adam Eaton, and you shouldn't be signing some of these other folks. So I think the pro scouting department is bad. But, you know, look, we will see. I think a long-term disaster would be if this is what Yoan Moncada is, making $17 million next year, making $24 million.
Forget the money. Take the money out of it.
I can't. You know why, Dan? Because as smart as those cost certainty deals seemed at the time, they have vastly limited the kind of free agents they sign. They're still spending $190 million. They're not being cheap. It's just that because of some of those cost certainty contracts that are going to be rising in future years, they're afraid of the big investment, and some of the investments they've made have been bad. The Grandal money does not look great. And this endless bullpen money, it's one thing if you're going to spend money on Hendricks. It's another to spend it then on Graveman and to spend it on Kelly when you've already spent it on Bummer. So you're limiting yourself into the profile of free agents that you can bring in to augment here during the window. And you've got a hit on your Adam Eaton style, which should have been Jock Peterson, perhaps. You know what I mean? Like, you've got to hit on those mid-level short-termers, or you're toast. And that's what we've seen on occasion.
If you didn't create the term out-of-town stupid, I think that you did. For whatever reason, my brain says that you did. And I look at the odds currently from BetOnline for the next MLB manager to be fired. Tony La Russa is 1-1.
Wow.
Even odds favorite to be fired. The next one after that, Dave Martinez and Scott Servais at 11-2. Mike Matheny at 6-1. David Bell at 9-1. Don Mattingly at 10-1. And I don't see, feel, sense anything even close to that. I don't know where those odds are coming from, if they're just trying to prey on White Sox panic and have people bet on hope. But there's nothing that I know that suggests there's any possibility of it.
Well, I mean, the out-of-town money must be nice for something like that. People perhaps not understanding the dynamic and maybe some Sox fan hope. But, you know, I mean, the thing that happened in L.A., which was much more close to a mirror than Joe Girardi in Philly, because Joe Maddon was Artie Moreno's hire, above Perry Minasian. And Perry Minasian, whose dad was the clubhouse guy in Texas and an old friend of Joe's, rose up and said, "Hey, Artie, we got to do this." But Artie Moreno is not a stable person, you know, and he's not a stable and loyal leader, for better or for worse. He's so vastly different than Jerry in that way. They've had five GMs in the last, I think it's 15 years. They've had three managers since Mike Socia left. You know, that is not a stable place. So the thing is not going to happen with some sort of rise up from Rick Hahn or somebody else, I don't believe. The only way that ever happens.
Wait a second. Are we giving this? Is this a plausible scenario? Or is this a dream sequence?
It's the bargaining phase. As we did the stages of grief the other day on Parkinson Spiegel, this is me bargaining. Okay. Danny was bargaining yesterday. He loved the Fire Tony chants and was thinking, oh yeah, if you rise up, maybe local, you can get in Jerry's ear, because Danny loves the promotional stunts and loves the idea of power to the people and peaceful protest and such. To me, it would be, on the human aging level, Jerry the friend realizing that this is an embarrassing look for the man at the end of his Hall of Fame career. Out of kindness and love and respect, Jerry looks at his buddy and says, you know what? I tried. I tried to right the wrong. I tried to bring some symmetry to my own White Sox tenure. I tried to do right by you, Tony, to allow you this one final run, doing what you love best. It's really, when you strip it away, it's kind of a beautiful gesture. an aim. You know, when you strip away the context of it, it's an old man wanting to right the wrong and take care of his friend, but it's not working.
It's almost literary. There's almost a Shakespearean, a generational aspect to it in that
100%, regard. 100%. And it's possible to me when, you know, that in the heart of hearts for Jerry, that maybe he'd allow himself to really notice that his friend is embarrassing himself. His friend is getting mocked on a daily basis.
And I brought this up yesterday. The question of the importance of one's Hall of Fame legacy.
Yeah, well,
if you could play to that, if we start having this fantasy scenario, and it is that, but I was wondering about someone who in his most desperate moment immediately describes himself as a Hall of Famer baseball person.
Mm-hmm.
That is an incredibly important aspect to him, to his identity. And people aren't going to remember the Bash Brothers and Dave Stewart and Bob Welch and Dennis Eckersley. And people might not remember that Cardinals team. There's a lot of people that are going to remember how this ends. And this is all they're going to know.
In this town, but in some ways it's Willie Mays on the Mets, though, isn't it? I mean, because, you know, and some people do remember that, but, you know,
I said it was Rex Harrison in My Fair Lady when my parents made me put on a coat and tie and go down to the Erie Crown Theater because my dad said, you must remember this. This is Rex Harrison as Henry Higgins in his iconic role. And I'm like, okay, fine. I'll put on the stupid coat and tie. And there we were in amazing seats. And this was really important to my parents. And Rex Harrison couldn't remember a line.
You know, well, that's too bad. That's really sad. And I hold out this sort of empathetic human hope that Jerry looks at it at some point and says, I don't want my friend to be mocked, and I don't want my friend to be struggling to represent himself well and be the subject of such ridicule. And my whole idea was to help him go away with a little bit of grace, that maybe I should end this with some grace, you know, and maybe it doesn't happen until after the season, but That's the only way I would ever see something changing, is if on the humanity tip, Jerry felt like his friend was embarrassing himself.
Did you see Chris Morrell fist bump the umpire before the game? On Friday, Marquee showed him, and they talked to the ump. The ump had apparently never happened to him before, where the leadoff hitter comes up and looks at the catcher, like, hey, how's it going? And fist bumps the catcher, and then fist bumps the umpire. Yeah. The leadoff hitter of a game.
Yeah, it's so delightful. You picked your favorite. Is the fist bumping of the umpire, and he's done that after a stolen base at second base, too, catching a guy off guard. I love the idea that he walked over from the on-deck circle and at one point shook Tom Ricketts' hand and introduced himself. That's over the past couple of weeks. But my favorite remains the hugging of Bruce Levine, which was, a bad short story, but was like the first time he met Bruce Levine.
Raymond Carver, I believe.
I think so. Yeah. The hugging of Bruce Levine. There was the first time he met him, there was a handshake. And the second time, Bruce went for the handshake or the fist bump. And Morrell's like, hey, you know, and he opens up and he hugs him. It's a beautiful thing. He looked bad in the crouch, in the two-strike crouch last night, trying to hit Yu Darvish. But everybody looked bad trying to hit Yu Darvish. There was a great moment on the broadcast last night where Boog and JD were talking about how Darvish has always been that guy, like Greinke, to mess with the grip and mess with his finger placement and throw six different versions of his curve or his slider and mess with the arm angle and screw around with stuff. Before there was pitch labs that everybody could do that with help of a pitching coach and advice, Darvish just grew up that way. And unlike Greinke, Darvish still has an arm to throw 96 and 97 sometimes. He's just a joy to watch. And it's kind of a tough watch. It's kind of a tough watch because that's the move. That's the move that was very much by choice. And while so many other moves can be explained, rationalized, or flat out understood from a baseball perspective of why they are here, that's the one that you cannot divorce yourself from. We got $59 million off the books. You just can't divorce yourself from it. And then you wonder how much that led to everything else. And that's why he's a tricky emblem of where the Cubs are right now.
And I don't know if that helped inform sort of an out of nowhere tweet from Joe Sheehan yesterday, whom I respect deeply. He's just a wonderful guy, brilliant baseball mind. And it's I found this to be a bit reductive and facile, perhaps. But Joe Sheehan tweeted, "This isn't the entire story. Player development, especially pitchers, was a big problem after the core reached the majors. But the Cubs are here because the owner wants them here, because it's profitable." Assess the validity of that tweet.
Yeah, I don't think that that is overall true. I think they made a decision about their core guys, and they made it too late. And they tried to sign some, and then after they tried to sign some, they realized that, wait a minute, these guys aren't learning, and maybe we shouldn't do that. Like, are they at a better place if they reinvest in Baez and Rizzo and Bryant?
No.
And make another go, and they're in a $280, $290 million payroll, you know, having added a few free agents and trying to suck one more year out of it or two more years out of it while they're bloated? That's going to be an uglier and longer turnaround in their minds, and they talked about exactly that. So I think there are baseball reasons for those things that make sense to me, and the way that those guys are performing elsewhere dovetails with that. And they also acknowledged, again, too late, their own failures in scouting and development. And to their credit, at least, they redid the hitting department and the pitching department and got rid of Jason McLeod and brought in Kantrovitz and stuff like that. It didn't all happen at the same time in the way it needs to really sustain. But if you think they should be a $280, $290 million payroll in the luxury tax year after year after year and just steamrolling ahead, then I understand the full-on disappointment. If you see the gray area that even the Yankees operate in, even the Red Sox operate in, even the Giants and other big market, big money teams operate in, where you don't want the repeater tax and you try to align your windows when you're healthy as an organization. I mean, the Mets are bucking that trend because Steve Cohen doesn't care. They're really one of one. The Yankees aren't really doing it the way that you might think the Yankees did in the past. So I think it's an oversimplification from Joe, but if he's thinking about the Darvish trade as a willing start to the Avalanche, I give that a little bit of credence.
It is also profitable. That part of the tweet is
sure
true.
When you
spend less money, you make more money, and that isn't even getting into the dichotomy of Hickory Street Partners and Cubs revenue and what is owned in the area by the Ricketts family. The whole real estate entertainment business that they're in outside of the baseball business is a different conversation to have. But it is more profitable when you spend less.
Yeah, no, for sure. But they're also drawing less, and there's a stink around the team going into the season at the beginning with everybody knowing they're not prioritizing winning on the big league level. That casts a pall that is still going on here. And that's not where they want to be. I don't think they're going to be there next year. I think they're going to have a very scrambling and aggressive offseason, and I think they're going to make some decisions, for better or for worse, about some of the guys they've been giving playing time. And I suspect that they're going to hit opening day next year with a different feeling that at least has some hope of contention. You know, they need to, because this is not a fan base that's really going to withstand more than 1 year of this kind of not prioritizing the big league level in terms of wins and losses. We say that,
but that I think that's selling this fan base's historical loyalty quite short. I will also mention, if you're into physical symbolism, that I drove by the corner of Addison and Sheffield at about 7:25 this morning, and the beams are up. The actual structure of the multi-story sports book is up almost overnight, and you there's been non-stop work going on, and the sooner that it gets close to being online, that big gleaming cash vacuum is going to really make it stand out more if dollars spent don't go back into their payroll. It is just crying out, whether it's going to be cutaway shots on, it won't be on marquee, but on your national games or however it goes, that if they want to show that off, and they do, and if they do want to use their own broadcast arms to advertise this crown jewel of a brick and mortar sports book, the downside for them is going to be, well, great, you're making a ton of money there. Congratulations. How does that help us win the World Series?
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that's going to be, it's going to be right up there with the revamped suites. And it's going to be right up there with all of the bleacher building, the rooftop purchases, and it's going to be up there with the Budweiser fan deck out there in Mesa, and like all those things that they've done that you have to do to bring the extra dollars in. Their core and the scouting and the development and the innards of them as an organization was not strong enough and needed to get stronger. So I do believe that they are working on that, and I think we're seeing a lot of results from that at lower levels, and aggressive placements show me that they're trying to move those guys up as fast as possible. And a success story like Morel here or there is a nice thing, or seeing Justin Steele. I mean, we're seeing a lot of pitchers who have a little bit more of a success story. And when you believe that you can deliver the kind of prefab players that have augmented Cardinals championship runs for decades and decades. Oh, who's Jeremy Hazelbaker? I don't know, but he's helping them win a division this year. Like, whoever it is, where the hell did Tommy Pham come from?
You know, you Randall Grichuk came up,
my
right?
God, like, one after another, because they built it and kept it and prioritized it and sustained it. And these guys didn't do it right at the beginning, so they're trying to do it right now.
Speaks, always fun. We could do this all day, anytime you want.
All right, Bernsie, thank you.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.